Sometimes I don't know how to start this show. You know, I sit there and I think. I always say, well, hello, it's that time again, or something along those lines. But I get very tired of that.
Sometimes I don't.
I don't want to offer up rote introductions to our show.
Sometimes,
and so, yeah,
it's like a plea. Sometimes I don't know what
to do. Like, listeners, if you have ideas or other ways.
No, shut your face. Because, this is our show. We do it how we want.
No, I'm just saying I like feedback. You know, this is the 80th
you
show.
You like hand-holding.
Think of this is the 80th show of TwinML. Pretty impressive.
Is it really?
Yeah, this is episode number 80.
Do I have to fly to where you are for the 100th, or are you going to fly to me this time?
I don't know, but we should have a party. Preferably somewhere serving fry sauce, so I think I might have to come to Utah.
I'll probably not be in Utah. In 20 weeks, let's be honest.
Why would you not? I thought Utah was like a thing. I thought you were actually locking in moving
6 months is what I'm giving myself.
Moving to Utah. I know you're spending a couple of weeks in Denmark, but beyond that.
Yeah, Denmark's going to be good. I'm in Copenhagen in like a week.
Is that
2 weeks?
That soon, huh? Wow.
Yeah, the 20.
Now, is there something 26? Bigger going on there? Because I also saw some of the Talking Heads at CNET were tweeting today that they were booking hotels in Copenhagen. It seems around the same time. So I take it the whole thing you're going for is part of a bigger.
No. I'm going for. Going to go and support a group of startups over there. Go and give some talks on how to be good entrepreneurs and that kind of thing.
And
how to work with mentors,
and you know
how to not be terrible at email so that people don't hate you.
Mm.
Things like that.
I like it.
It's a thing.
It is a thing.
But I have no idea what else is going on over there. I'm excited though. I saw pictures of the office and it's schnazzy. And I'm staying with like locals. I'm doing an Airbnb thing.
Oh, you're doing that, huh?
That's how
I
roll.
Did you hear when they talked about that on This Week in Tech a couple of weeks ago?
Nah, well, I saw the story. It was like, it was some crazy Airbnb gate.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Airbnb, for those of you who don't know, is how people, like, you can rent out a room in your house, like a hotel, and you just go and search for places, mm-hmm. you can find them, and then you can say, no, I want the whole house, or I'll just take that room. And it's handy, so like if you own a place and you don't mind people sleeping in a guest room, it's a way for you to make a little extra scratch.
But the reason it's a little bit risky is because you can also rent out an entire flat if you wanted to, or a house. And that whole article, or that story, was about how there weren't really any protections in place.
Well, there kind of is. You get the reviews and stuff, and so you're able to look at people and say, this guy looks legit, he doesn't. I don't know. It is risky, though.
Well, I get that. I mean, it's more, no, if you're looking to be the one who rents, you're fine because you're just going in there. It's more that the lessees, the owners of the properties, people are going to their places and trashing them, and Airbnb isn't responsible at all.
One time.
It happens every week.
One time. Anyway.
Well, whatever.
I'm excited to go, though. I've never been up in Scandinavia. This will be a good time.
Are you going
to
venture up to your Swedish ancestors while you're there? Hop on a train?
Yeah, I plan on it. I'm going to. I need to buy a ticket so I can swing through there.
You have to go to Stockholm.
I know.
Right? Because...
It'll be great.
Those are your people.
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
Well, I'm excited for you, my friend.
Good quick little trip.
It sounds marvelous.
Had my birthday this last week. Have we talked since then?
Because we intentionally did not record on Monday night last week because it was your birthday.
That's right. Did I tell you about Planet of the Apes?
I think we talked about it. You thought it was stupid.
Yeah, that's
yeah, right. yeah. We had a whole discussion.
So it was like the Twilight Zone, though. I went to, I forget where I was, Friday night or something. We were out at a party, and these girls are telling me that they cried. They sobbed through the whole last half. I feel like the guy with the Emperor's New Clothes. I'm looking around, and I'm like, are we talking about the same movie, people? Everybody loves it.
Also,
everybody.
Also, maybe you were naked by chance.
No, they were naked.
So they were the emperor, and you were just...
They thought they had invisible clothes
Who
on.
Who knew?
All right, I feel like I'm turning into Tracy Morgan now. How was your week, Jeff?
I would actually love it if you turned to Tracy Morgan. I am a Jedi!
They was wearing the invisible clothes!
There's lemon!
That's a great accent. Well done.
I can do a pretty good Tracy Morgan. I'm a little bit rusty because I haven't watched any 30 Rock since the season finale. in May, but I promise I can resurrect it. Oh, I'm fine. Today was a sad day for me, actually.
What happened?
In the mail came my Virginia license. I went to the DMV last week and surrendered my California license.
Why would you do that?
I wouldn't normally, but my license is up for renewal. My birthday is in a month. And it's the renewal time in California where I have to go in person, where finally they actually want to take a new picture of me and test my eyesight and stuff. Because my California license still has a photo of me when I'm 16 years old on it. And I've even been to DMVs over the past few years and asked them if I could just get a new photo. I feel like I'm helping the legal process through this, you know, so I can be identified by my license. Because yeah. I'm this scrawny 16-year-old kid with braces and spiky hair in this photo.
Wait, did they take your license or did they let you keep it?
No, they punch a void punch in it and then give it back.
Dude, the girl in Missouri, she punched a void right through my picture.
That's harsh.
I was angry.
So so now I have a Virginia license. These are far less illustrious than California ones.
I
knew you were going to say shut your face. I'm saying that objectively. I mean, honestly, the California one is in color, for one. My picture's in black and white in Virginia. They don't list my weight, which is probably a good thing. And they also messed up my birthday because it has my birthday as 3 days before what my actual birthday is. So either my birthday is legally changed from here on out, or I think I probably have to go back to the.
No. Now you go to Village Inn and you get a free pie 3 days before, and then you take the legit one and you get a free pie that day too.
I don't think we have any Village Inn out here though. It's terrible.
I'm sure there's something you can find at Denny's.
Which are also few and far between. You remember we had this discussion as we dined at IHOP when you were here. So
never I mind.
Anyways, it was kind of a sad day. You know how much I jealously guard my Californian identity.
Yeah,
that's a piece of the puzzle. I almost registered to vote, too, but I couldn't bring myself to do that. So I can still vote in California elections, as far as I know.
Did you watch your preseason football?
No, but I watched the Republican debate on Thursday. Which I enjoyed. Remember,
I watched the latter half of that after you notified me it was going on.
We were IMing during it.
What'd you think of our boy Romney?
He was fine. I don't know. I don't think he didn't do much of anything, really. He was just kind of there holding his ground, basically. He's up on the highest rampart, and he's just looking down at everyone else.
You know
squabbling.
Who continues? I was never a huge Ron Paul supporter because he's got he's like 85% rock solid and then 15%. I don't know where he's coming from.
Okay.
But I'm swaying. I'm kind of pulling for the guy. I'm rooting for old Ronnie.
Well, if you remember 4 years ago, remember, I was in love with the man. I'd sit here and watch these primaries, especially on foreign policy. I don't agree with Ron Paul on a lot of stuff, but when it comes to foreign policy, I just sit there like, preach on, brother.
And really? You're anti-war?
In many cases, yes. And I love that, especially 4 years ago. Now the economy is the much bigger issue. 4 years ago, terrorism was still very much on the plate as far as a campaign issue. And you'd have Giuliani up there blabbering on about how the entire Muslim world is united against us and this and that. And Ron Paul was the only guy who had the sense and clearly has actually done his history and his homework and understands.
What do you think about old Perry?
Oh boy, Rick Perry. I think Rick Perry is the only one who poses a legitimate threat to Romney at this point.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Because Bachman's not going to get the nomination. She's at the end of the day, Iowans.
She's the winner of Ames.
Of a straw poll. Congratulations. Though it was enough to knock Pawlenty out, which is kind of sad. But Bachman doesn't have appeal outside of conservative Western things.
Bless her heart.
And she's crazy. She's out of her mind. She's great.
No, come on.
And especially if Palin jumps in the mix, then it's going to kill both of them. They're just going to cancel each other out. And Huntsman didn't leave much of an impression on me during the debate, really. He was just kind of there. I know he wasn't in the straw poll at all, so he was just kind of trying to.
It was interesting to hear his how he handled himself in the debate, though, wasn't it? The equal rights question where he was just. He's trying so hard to be conservative-based, but, free-thinking and middle ground. And he was just, I didn't feel like he could answer the question.
It's hard. That's the problem with primaries, not in either party, but especially in the Republican Party, because you basically sit there trying to prove that you are the most conservative, you are the most Christian, or whatever, which doesn't matter as much in the general election, but it's this kind of, it's this stupid kind of ironic way things are done where you have to try to appeal to the fringes of your party to get the nomination and then try to ignore that fringe so you can actually win the general election. So, yeah, Huntsman missed his chance, though. I think Huntsman's in a place where he can position himself as the moderate, as like the sane moderate one who can win a general election, but he's not latching on to that, so I don't know.
Yeah, it was fun to watch.
Oh, Ron Paul was great. Plenty's out of it now. Newt Gingrich was hilarious.
Dude, Newt's a nut.
He came out of nowhere. I love it. I mean, I don't think you were watching it yet when they asked him some dumb question, because he had a lot of people in his campaign.
Newt and McCain both, man. Those guys had some left field answers.
McCain?
Or Howard, what's his name?
Oh, Herman Cain.
Herman Cain, I love, not McCain.
Herman Cain makes me smile every time he's up there.
Dude, that guy. Woo. Fireball.
I'm just waiting for him to channel his inner Johnny Cochran and just be like, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. You know, old, I'm bracing myself for that. Johnny Cochran, may he rest in peace. So, debate was great. I mean, I love the political season, even if I cringe at a lot of what is said and done. Who doesn't love it? It's exciting stuff.
Hey, speaking of which, this week in Mormons,
that's us.
Old Stephen Colbert.
Oh, it was brilliant.
Brought us up. I was happy for the mention. A lot of dude, I saw a ton of my friends, Facebook, Twitter, that kind of stuff.
It was everywhere.
This thing was hitting the viral. It was going nuts. But so what it was is Colbert does a bit called Yahweh or No Way. And yes, Jeff?
I just love it. It just makes me laugh every time I've seen it. It's
who doesn't love some
Yahweh
Colbert?
Or No Way?
And it's just a comedy bit. So he spotlights Mormonism this week and gives us a pretty good little nod, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, because he talked a lot about the whole I'm a Mormon campaign that we've all been talking about for the past, you know, year and a half or so.
Which I love.
It's great.
I love. And, so he mentions it's on the I'm a Mormon bit, and he goes through and, like, shows a couple of them, pieces of them, and then does like, a Catholic rebuttal to it. Because he's...
Which was hilarious.
Because he's just like, no, we should... have this. I mean, Mormons are motorcycle riding, surfing women who love to golf. He's like, that's good. If anything, I felt like it gave us like it was a good piece of publicity so far as like trying to look and feel normal. He picked good pieces.
Yeah,
it made us come across very well, I thought.
No, it did. I mean, the great thing was I thought about when you and I sat there a few weeks ago in the visitor center in D.C., watching pretty much every video that they showed, when they showed the Harley sculptor guy and your friend, the surfer, and all that. And I loved it. I was cracking up. But the Catholic part was pretty dang funny, too, because I was like...
He high-fived a tiger.
That was the best part. High-five a tiger!
Changed like...
Changed my world.
The thing that I liked about it, it uses some humor to kind of talk about Mormonism. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. Spread it around. It's just good fun. So
yeah, I'd be surprised if you are LDS and use social media, because it was pretty hard to miss last week. So
oh yeah, a lot of people shared it. But
if you haven't seen it, look for Yahweh or No Way. We Mormons, we just love attention.
It sounds like a Limp Bizkit song almost.
I almost miss Limp Bizkit almost. I mean, when you've got songs like Rollin' or Break Stuff. It's beautiful. There's no breaks. There's a song called Break Stuff, and the purpose of the song is to explain one's anger and a desire to break things. So
he sings about what he knows.
Fred Durst is great. The man doesn't need to be a poet. He is all about prose. He understands the people. He just straight up. There's no symbolism here. No imagery.
Just straight up, by Jeff.
Break stuff. Give me something to break. That's what he says. I'm enjoying the awkward silence, personally.
Good. It's going to be good.
Yeah. All right. So this is a story I love, and it floated around a little bit last week. Our boy McKay Coppins, who, incidentally, he and I have been communicating quite a bit more on Twitter lately.
What else have you said?
Oh, today he tweeted that apparently Mitt Romney owns something between $300,000 and $500,000 worth of horses.
It's a good investment.
And I responded that maybe he loves horses so much, Mitt Romney could lobby to lift the ban on importing horse lard.
Is there such a ban?
Yeah, you can't. It's fine in Europe, but the U.S. doesn't allow it to be imported.
And what did McKay say?
He just said, well, that's all fine and dandy, but I think he's a horse lover, not a horse killer.
Oh, that Coppins.
Oh, the Coppins.
Jeff, you're so witty.
No, he and I have been having just a marvelous time. Oh, the fun we have together.
I want him to tweet out, Jeff, I forgive you.
He doesn't need to forgive me. I think he might have picked up on the fact that, we're one and the same, because I often tag him and stuff, and I send it from my own account and the Twim account on Twitter at the same time.
Yes.
Anyway, so our boy McKay, there's a great thing going on entitled The Other Mormon Primary, talking about how in Arizona, you've got Jeff Flake, who's a standing U.S. congressman, a five-term congressman, who's looking to take the soon-to-be-vacated seat, John Kyle's vacated Senate seat.
And John Kyle?
John Kyle is retiring from the Senate. So next year, that seat will be open.
Oh, wait a minute.
And Jeff Flake is going for it. However, Will Cardin, Will with one L, an everyman from Arizona, sort of more of a Tea Party-ish guy. Jeff Flake's a little bit more of a moderate pragmatist type, is also vying for the seat. So there will be a primary for the Republican Senate seat. But the beauty of this is that they are in the same ward. Not even the same state.
This feels like a bad Deseret book plot.
Not the same. this could be great LDS fiction. It really.
It's Republicans at our barbecue.
We need more LDS political thrillers, I think. So it's just fun because they are in the same ward in North Mesa. And basically you've got the congregation is like divided between the two of them. And as far as who they support, I mean, this isn't the biggest deal in the world, but when we hear a lot about Romney and Huntsman and all this and that, it is kind of fun in Arizona, where for one thing, the Mormonism doesn't matter. Arizona is about 6% LDS. People don't really think much about it, you know, if you're in the Mesa area, because if you're not Mormon, you know Mormons, and it doesn't have that taboo like it has perhaps in the Eastern U.S. And so you've got two Mormons gunning for it, but I would just love to see the dynamic of this. Going to church with both of them.
And I quote from a neighbor summing up the tensions in the neighborhood, the whole thing is like a giant Mormon Jerry Springer show.
It's true. All these people from the Ozarks are going to show up and start beating each other up.
You leave my people out of this.
Look, you know that's where they're all from. It's not my fault.
How awkward would that be, though? Because like you look at like a Romney, right? And Romney's got, he's got wards all over the place that are just like pro-Romney.
I know.
And then all of a sudden take one of those and divide it in two?
I know. Well, it's like stuff I've wondered. Like if it really comes down to it, Romney has broader appeal, for example, but in Utah, will Huntsman have more pull there because that's his home state and he was governor there? You know? I don't know.
No. I'm back on Flake and Cardin.
I love Flake and Cardin.
How awkward. I wonder if they had any reservations about putting their friends through this. And saying, this is like a divorce, right? This is like your mom and dad are getting divorced. Really, and they're like, all right, who do you like the most? That's who you get to live with. It's like, well, I like you both. Cardin, you got this great little family with Argyle sweaters. And Flake, I mean, you look adorable. You're like a little, I don't know, John somebody.
He almost looks like a blonder, younger John Kerry.
I was thinking of... Oh, who's Jackie Chan's counterpart in so many bad movies?
You mean Chris Tucker?
No! No. I'm thinking of, like, Shanghai Noon.
Oh, Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson. Doesn't Jeff Flake look like Owen Wilson?
No, not really, but sure. Okay.
Or like Chris Tucker. He could go either way.
I know. I like the divorce analogy. I think at some point one of them is going to have to give a speech talking to people and saying, hey, this isn't about you guys. We love you. We both love you. We just don't love each other anymore.
What happened to them?
So it says it's fun, like the last statement there. In the meantime, North Mesa's Mormons will be left to stew about tense dinner parties and uncomfortable church functions.
So when do they vote?
I don't know if the article even says. I mean, it won't be for a while. Primaries won't be till sometime next year, and then, you know, not until the general election will we actually have the Republican pitted against the Democrat for the actual seat. So it's hard to say. I mean, I don't know if this Will Cardin guy's for real. Flake obviously has much more as far as experience and infrastructure and all that. I mean, he's been in Congress for 10 years. But maybe Will Cardin can grab onto that Tea Party tail and just ride it.
Wouldn't it be great if, like, they started slinging mud, though?
Oh, it'd be
like,
hilarious.
Like, it gets close to the wire, and he's like, well, if y'all want to live like his fat alcoholic mother, then go ahead and vote for old Cardin. I'm going to go with Flake. No, like, you get the... They don't say it, but they send their stumpers out to go and, like, talk dirt, just like old Huckabee.
It's going to happen. I was at a thing with Jeff Flake, and I found out that he actually played basketball with President Obama. This is, like, as bad as Huntsman being an ambassador for Obama. Why doesn't he just work in Obama's office and just love him?
Well, he's already been the basketball guy.
Well, that's all.
I'm not
going
to lie. I would love to play some ball with President Obama.
It'd be awesome.
I think I could shake and bake.
Oh, I'm sure you could, just because you're huge. And you just stand there in front of the hoop and have people throw the ball, and you just plop it into the hoop.
Leave me alone.
Giant ogre of a man.
So I've got a question for you.
Tell me. Show me.
This is something I've been pondering. I had a conversation with one. I'm pondering doing a like trying to write it out in a little piece. But I had a conversation with a good friend of mine, a mentor buddy, who he's doing some work with institute programs, and he's finding that like institute numbers are dropping like crazy. Right, like the numbers of people that are going to institute now are significantly less than they used to be.
Really,
and the young single adult, like 25 to 35, is the highest risk demographic for the church. Like that's where.
Oh well, yeah, duh. Yeah.
They're dropping like crazy, right? Like numbers are being thrown around. Like 9 out of 10 people that don't get married through that stage end up just floating away forever.
But is that what he's saying though? Do we blame it on singledom? Is that like the primary, the driving force?
Well, there's a number of issues that come to play here, right? And one of the comments that came out of this conversation was that there, you know, there's a lot of focus that we put on the spiritual welfare of people in this demographic. Well, and people at all, right? Like through seminary, we get a lot of like spiritual care. But the temporal side of it is largely ignored due to a couple of reasons. One is kind of an ignorance from the instructors, right? You have a lot of like seminary teachers or institute directors who've never had a job except for this seminary or institute. And so they have really like they can't play a role there. So they lack the ability to drive application between living a good, like wholesome spiritual life and how that actually translates into you having a good, successful, happy life where you can eat food and live a good life and provide for your family, which those two things work together, right? They really do. And so, yeah.
Well, can I interject for a second?
Yes.
I actually kind of like that analogy because I could see it. That's the closest thing we have, I think, institute instructors to having like a paid clergy almost. You know,
right.
These men who don't know another life, basically. And so that puts them at a disadvantage. I completely agree with you.
Well, and so what he was seeing, though, is that, like, he's a very successful entrepreneur, a mentor of mine, and he's done some work down in a couple of different areas, actually, in, like, driving mentorship and you know, like, just successful people that have done well in life to go back and kind of like a big brother program for people coming up through institute, coming right out of college, hoping to maybe to like make a connection for them so that they can have somebody to go to like actually help apply the spiritual knowledge they're learning and what they've got from school and all these other areas. And it's a way that they're finding of like grabbing people and bringing them back into the church. Because if you're able to provide for yourself and you're able to feed your family and or feed yourself even and cover your rent, then you're not driven to some of these other like circles of friends maybe or whatever it is, whatever excuses people use to go inactive. And for me, well, so it resonated with me because the closest I've ever been probably to going to going inactive is when I get myself so busy with work that it's not like a conscious decision. It's just like if I missed a Sunday, I would never pick back up, right? Like, and so it's very like I have to be very meticulous about making sure I'm paying attention where I need to. But like my entire week is full of other activities. I've got professional pursuits. Like I'm worried right now in this stage of my life with the professional side of things and succeeding there. And so for me, it struck home. I'm curious though, because I've had a couple of conversations around this and just asking, you know, like of the people that you know, what like would that have maybe fallen away or that are struggling, like would that make a difference? What's missing for them? Is it the temporal? Like if they had that second springboard on the temporal side to kind of drive that together, would that make a difference? I don't know. I'm really curious. I was curious to bring it up with you, Jeff, because I'm curious to see kind of your thoughts, but I'm also really curious to hear from our listeners so far as, you know, do you call BS? Like if there's no merit to this, then what do we do for the 9 out of 10 or the 8 out of 10, yeah, whatever that number is?
Well, and let me make sure I understand you. So just in fewer words, let me make sure that I understand when you're saying the
summarize.
No. When you're saying the temporal, whatever, what's the main crux there? Just so I fully.
The main crux is as I come out of college, my primary concern is how to build a professional career for myself. Whereas growing up towards a mission, your primary concern is how to become ready spiritually. And so as soon as we let that disconnect, right, and all of a sudden Institute, well, and you probably can relate to this, Institute for me is a lot less interesting now than it used to be. And I don't think it's because we have bad instructors. I think it's because I don't prepare as much. I don't go seeking as much. Honestly, like my primary focus in life is a little bit misdirected. But that's everyone that I know in this stage in life.
Yeah. So then what are the options? How do we help these people? I agree with you with what you're saying. It makes sense. Because it's true. I think one of the biggest things is that, like, say for missions, it's harder from a guy perspective because we always have the mission on our mind. So I can't quite offer a feminine perspective, unfortunately. But, yeah, because we prepare for missions spiritually is one thing. But I think also because it's a clear, defined goal, even though sometimes we might lollygag around like I did. I didn't go till I was 20 and a half, mostly just because I was just procrastinating. But the point is, it's this goal. So you know that not only is it important to prepare spiritually, but we have to focus on being worthy of going and stuff like that. And I think that's harder post-mission because while we have a drive to get married and to do this and that, that's also there's no set time frame for that. There's no, like, you need to plan and you're going to be married. You can plan on being married by the time you are 24 or whatever. That's the age you should plan on. And so we don't always keep ourselves as prepared as we should be in that sense because it's so vague. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, and the people that do, like, you go to BYU, you get married, like, most of them are fine, right? Nobody worries about them. If you get married in time and blah, 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 the church is built for, like, it's a good fraternity and everything around these married people and the family, and like it's a place for you to go and meet other people doing similar things. But as a single guy, you lose that fraternity, right? I look around at my singles ward and I'm like, gosh, you know, you're kind of a bunch of bozos. Like, I don't
making friends everywhere you go. Good job.
Well, no, I like professionally, I don't connect with almost any of them ever.
Sure.
And I've been to a lot of singles wards, like 20 almost in the last 3 years, and almost I can think of one or two that maybe I've connected with professionally. Like, we lose that fraternity or that ability for us to really strike a chord with somebody else in our quorum or somebody else that's working on similar things that we can powwow with, and so we have to go elsewhere for that. I'm curious though if we see a similar thing with women, because women are taught, you know, like, marriage is the goal, and so as they get up to that point, and let's say they reach you know, they get into their 30s and they start realizing that they need to pursue a career, that maybe marriage isn't going to happen the way they thought it was when they were 14. I wonder if that's like a really high risk point, so far as activity goes in the church.
Well, undoubtedly. I mean, remember that, earlier in the year, that letter, that big thing that was in the New York Times.
To feel a man's hand.
Yes, feel a man's hand. The start of our month of lechery. Yes. It was, yeah, I mean, that was a perfect example of that, of someone effectively being fed up.
Well, I wonder what the, I wonder like how drastic of a turn that is, like how big those numbers are, how real that struggle is.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, and of course these are not the only cases of people slipping away. There are many times when people have just simply issues with the church, whatever, the way we go about things, protocol. Right. But I think it is true that probably the majority are people who are believing faithful members, but over time it just feels like you don't belong there anymore. Not that you want to feel that way, but because you just don't feel like you have anywhere to go. You don't have a support network. It's harder in your late 20s, obviously.
Well, right, and with like if you connected with a mentor, or you had some of that professional application or the actual. All right, here's the abstract principles that we learned about in Institute. Here's how this translates into you being a better provider or a better member of society. Like, let's work on that. And we're all, there's five of us here at this round table that are going to crank on this. And these are our close buddies that we're going through this program with. I'm just curious. If anybody else kind of sees the pain point that I'm seeing, because it's a lot of people have disagreed with me and they vehemently disagree. But I've gotten a good handful of people that have said, no, I think that's spot on. We're definitely missing that. And that right now the weight falls on the Institute directors who don't have the ability to apply that. It's not built into them.
Yeah. Well, and this isn't to be, too generally, because many, many, many Institute teachers are guys who have had previous employment doing something else and they just have a change of pace. Many are not. I totally agree with you, but I've known a number of them who worked in various capacities and decided that working for CES and doing that somehow suited them better, and more power to them. But I do agree that a lot of the time there seems to be, when you have people who are just professional CES people, that there's that lack of perspective. I think it's hard. I've sat in classes because I just sit there like, this is all great and I feel the spirit about what you're saying, and the gospel is true and what you're saying is true, but at the same time it's hard for me to take it because you like don't understand what we're going through.
Right,
because a lot of those hunky dory Institute people are guys who got married, boom, like when they were 22.
Well, they understand they've been doing being single to like 23, and then they give you advice like, "Oh, just get out there and make it happen, and it'll be great." Or it's like when if you're unemployed and somebody says, "Well, why don't you go get a job?" and it's like, "Well, it's a little more involved than that."
Yes. And I mean, I don't want to be a jerk, but I have a hard time taking advice, even if someone is married. If someone's married before they can even rent a car without a penalty for their age, it's harder to relate.
But it's no fault of theirs.
And these are wonderful people. But at the same time, sometimes there's a lack of grounded reality. It's
something that's been on my mind.
I can tell. Thank you for sharing with the class.
Yes, sir.
It's very kind of you. Well, let's see. What'll I mention here?
I like that you're building in awkward silences between stories.
I feel like is it not really like raising the dramatic effect for you? Because I felt like it was really leaving people hanging. Like, what is going to happen?
Yeah,
next?
No, I felt it.
I mean, what could this possibly be? I'll give a little bit of a shout out here to one Gary Lawrence. We've talked about old Gary on the show here before. Gary speaks at some of those church conferences, fair conferences, this and that. He's been a very big advocate in recent years of we've talked about the two different perspectives of missionary work, those who feel that we should try to be embraced by the greater Christian community and talk about how much we have in common with everybody else, and then those like Gary who feel that that puts us at a disadvantage and we need to stress what makes us different and what makes us unique, and because that's what worked in the past and that's where we saw these strong converts from days of old come from, because we made the point about explaining that no, Mormonism is a different faith. This is not just you joining some Protestant denomination. So he's talked a lot about that. He published a great book about those sorts of things. And now he's got a new book coming out that looks at Mormon misconceptions. Dun, dun, dun.
Ooh.
So I don't think that this will be as polemic, perhaps, as his previous stuff, because really this is just about doing away with misconceptions. And so I don't think there's a lot of room for different interpretations. It's like someone says we're not Christians, and then we say, well, actually, hello. But this definitely stems from his missionary efforts, because we see more and more the misconceptions. And as we have two candidates running for president, two candidates ready for bloodbath in Arizona, you know, these things will have a lot more sway. And so there's not a lot more that I have to say about it. But Gary is a friend of my family, so I like to give him the love. But hey, he's worthy. He's in the Deseret News. So
I've got some excitement going on here. Sherlock Holmes.
I love this story.
Is being banned from reading lists for being anti-Mormon
in North Carolina. Yes, I love this story.
So I got to get back down to where I see the name of the mystery.
A Study in Scarlet.
A Study in Scarlet. Yeah. So A Study in Scarlet has been required reading in this high school for some time. But apparently, I've read quite a bit of Sherlock, I never noticed he was anti-Mormon per se. But let me throw you a couple of excerpts. It says, Sir Arthur responded that in the future, this is an excerpt from the letter in Scarlet, right? Yes. Sir Arthur responded that in the future he would write of the Latter-day Saints as he found them on his visit, but he insisted, all I said about the Danite band and the murders is historical, so I cannot withdraw that, though it is likely that in a work of fiction it is stated more luridly than in a work of history. It is best to let the matter rest. That and his praise of the pioneers was as close as he would come to a public apology.
That monster.
Also, this is a good one.
Oh, and John, I was wrong. This is in Virginia, by the way. Sorry, not North
John
Carolina.
Ferrier had always determined, deep down in his resolute heart, that nothing would ever induce him to allow his daughter to wed a Mormon. Such a marriage he regarded as no marriage at all, but as a shame and a disgrace. Whatever he might think of the Mormon doctrines, upon that one point he was inflexible. He had to seal his mouth on the subject, however, for to express an unorthodox opinion was a dangerous matter in those days in the land of the saints.
The land of the saints.
You know, I think Sherlock Holmes does hate Mormons. Sure, let's just get it out there.
Filthy Arthur Conan Doyle, a Scotsman, born in Edinburgh. I should have known.
Not really. He probably doesn't hate Mormons, but
well, he's also dead.
At the time, I can understand the kind of the slanted writing. And if any, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with the ban. I think it's kind of a. I mean, all right, nice that that we're trying to be very sensitive and not propagate the misconceptions and stuff, but it's Sherlock Holmes. I don't know. What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I think the one thing the parent made, the argument the parent made, is that this was, what was the year class? Sixth grade. And so they say this is, you know, at that age, sixth graders are generally 11 years old. And so she's saying this is something they read at this young age, and this might be their first exposure to any concept of Mormonism, which is, you know, understandable if you're in Central Virginia where this is going on. And so that could give you an idea, because I mean, think back to that age. Mormons, was it there was such?
It's good to get this stuff out of there, I guess.
So I see that, but at the same time, I'm not one of those people who. I don't, like, believe much in censorship, at least as far as when it comes to libraries and stuff like that. Like, when you have these schools banning Harry Potter from their libraries, I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? So, because I think it's important for kids to learn the difference between, you know, what's good and bad, and to think for themselves. So, there's a fine line between what is too impressionable upon kids and what allows them to think things out for themselves and figure it out. Hard to say. But as a side note, I told you this before on the show, I just love that this came up because I just watched yesterday, last year the BBC did a 3-episode show called Sherlock, which kind of brought Sherlock Holmes into the 21st century.
Yeah.
And it was very good. It has Martin Freeman.
Sheen.
Who's in the British version of The Office, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And he's going to play
Lawrence.
Bilbo Baggins in the Hobbit film coming out. Anyway, he's in it. He plays Watson. But it was just funny because I see these things about the story. And that episode was called A Study in Pink, and it was sort of an adaptation of A Study in Scarlet.
Did they hate Mormons?
No, there was none of that. I think they took a lot of liberties. But I noticed it because it said, when it says the word Ratch scrawled in blood beside the body, R-A-C-H-E.
Rach.
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 Rach, which is the German word for revenge, I learned.
Uh-oh.
And so I don't know how much of it takes off from there because they did different things. I just thought it was funny. It was just funny that I watched this yesterday and then...
Right. And boom.
Right here. Boom shakalaka.
In other news, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania temple, the ground is broken.
Well, it's going to be. No, Al, let's... Al, this is a good...
On the 17th of September, groundbreaking day.
This is a good chance to practice you proofreading things before we talk about them.
You're a jerk, Jeff.
Look, I don't want you to have to experience what you experienced.
I
love
that. I love that moment. That was great.
It was hilarious, but, you know. Yeah, so September 17th, Henry B. Eyring will preside over the groundbreaking of the Philly Temple. Good for him.
Neat.
I'm proud of him. Another interesting article. Oh, which one should I do?
Also, let me tell you, BYU Broadcasting has its own building.
This big, giant building.
It's big. It's full of broadcast equipment.
That's right.
Things like stereos, boom boxes.
What?
And lawn chairs.
It'll be beautiful. And, you know, the real fun of it is that now you can make sure it's state of the art. So you can watch nascent journalists do the news at the BYU with a better studio than what they had before.
Finally.
Because somehow the sheen and gleam of a newer studio is going to, you know, correct the fact that at the end of the day, they're still just amateur journalists who hardly know what they're doing because they're learning. So why do we get them nicer facilities? I feel like
and
it's a waste of my tithing.
Goes the dynamite.
Waste of my tithing. And it's also a good excuse to have more better
sports.
The man
gets the ball and... Boom goes the dynamite.
You know how I feel. I feel like why can't they invest more money in tearing down the old performing arts building and redoing that? Why? Why can't they do that? Why does it always have to be about sports?
Because.
BYU is way too sports happy and not enough arts happy.
That is true. That is true.
All right. A little bit of a final story here. Not directly related to us, but there's a story here on the Huffington Post about... celebrating Ramadan while going to BYU. It's written by a guy who attended BYU as a Muslim. You know, the church has a lot of outreach programs with Middle Eastern countries to bring him over.
Yes.
And so he talked kind of about his experiences being a Muslim at BYU and celebrating Ramadan, which he said was very difficult because, you know...
What is Ramadan?
Ramadan is happening right now.
Ramadan is happening right now.
You're very disrespectful. Ramadan is happening right now. It is... a very holy month for Islam. One of the components of it is one fasts from sunup until sundown. So it's not, and that's for the whole month. So you eat a bunch before the sun rises, don't eat it all during the day, and then you party it up and eat at night.
I think come next November, we should call the entire month of October Ramadan. What do you say?
Okay.
That'll be our thing.
If we're still doing
you like it, don't steal it.
If we're still doing the show, then it's ours.
Perfect.
I love it. So anyway, so you can imagine. I mean, I knew a number of Muslim students at the Y. And but here they
what
are.
What did they do?
Celebrating Ramadan. And they even do stuff now. Some of the professors who are kind of a little more up on their religious stuff and aren't, how do I say it?
Wade Jacoby.
Ignorant jerks will actually like have a feast with the Muslim students and this and that. But they tell these stories about how he'd sit in the Wilkinson Center and people would be eating him food and trying to force him to eat while he's fasting. Or later on, years down the line, a bunch of the Muslim students would organize a feast and they were waiting for the sun to go down to start eating. And they opened it up for other people to come and join, have sort of an interfaith educational experience. But all of the Mormon kids just showed up and ate the food before the sun even went down and like left nothing for the Muslims because they didn't know any better.
Like a horde of locusts.
Pretty much. And so I think we could do with
Sounds
more of that
terrible.
Understanding because I think, sadly, the majority of the BYU student body, I mean, really, you get out of the humanities at BYU.
What you put into them.
And nobody else knows much of anything. So I just wanted to send this out. And so they have the break the fast stuff. It's great. But the thing is, he had a positive experience overall.
Oh, good.
Which is the nice thing. He says that people did become more accommodating. And of course, people tried to convert him. He said he had like 7 copies of the Book of Mormon in different languages over his time there. But eventually they give up when you've been around for a couple of years. So Ramadan's going on now, everyone. And if you have Muslim friends, I encourage all of you to ask them about Ramadan. And if they feast, to feast with them when the sun goes down.
And if they fast, feast for them.
There you go. But, you know, it's good. We need a little more interfaith understanding. And,
it's true.
So I think it's a
good
thing.
It is true.
We should embrace our Islamic brothers and sisters because they're wonderful.
All right, I'll do it.
Is that going to be it?
But
do we want to talk about Romney's finances?
How he pays tithing?
Basically, there's a whole article about how Romney pays tithing. It says Mitt Romney gives millions to charity, most to Mormon Church.
Yeah, he pays his tithing.
Basically.
Boom. Surprise, surprise. All right. Well, great talking to you all this week.
It's been illuminating for me.
I love you.
I love you more.
All right, Jeff. Have a great week, man.
So much.
All right, I'll see you later, buddy.
Bye, Al. I guess I'll sign us off, I guess. Everyone, please send us an email. Contact
us. You know how to find us.
Oh, Al's back. Do it, Al.
You jerk, Jeff.
Do it.
Contact.
Tell him.
At This Week in Mormons, twitter.com/TheRealTwim, facebook.com/ThisWeekinMormons, and thisweekinmormons.com.
Oh, that was so beautifully done.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Thank you for listening, everyone. And, of course, please listen for Sunday School Bonanza, which we very much enjoy doing.
Do you like my little sign-up buttons I made?
Yes, I do. I saw them today. They made me smile in my heart.
Good. Thank you.
So please find us there. Subscribe to Sunday School Bonanza. It's great to prepare for gospel doctrine.
So true, brother.
Everyone have a great week. Thank you, Al. Have a terrific remainder of your week there.
I will do it.
Everyone, thank you so much for listening. I didn't know how to begin the show, but I know how to end it. Thank you for listening to This Week in Mormons. Have a terrific week. Goodbye.
You cry.